Test, test. Hey, hey, Case. Test, test. Come on. Test, test, test. There we go. Test, test, test. Every day, just die.
XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From the fairgrounds in New Orleans, 24 hours out from Mardi Gras, a very good Monday race fan. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. I suppose I should mention it's President's Day, right? That they slipped that in, too. You lose all sense of proportion and time and space in this town. Unbelievable. It's been an education, I'll tell you that, on a lot of fronts, not just proximity to Mardi Gras and everything that goes on with the parades. I mean it's crazed. I thought last year when I was staying in the Garden District and that Indigo there on St. Charles, and the parades came by. It's a little bit different staying a block from Canal Street, and every other parade is just coming down and circling into Canal, and even when the parades break up, 9:30, 10:30 at night, then there's another 24 hours of merriment. I'm on the 10th floor of a building. It's like an apartment. I told you, I'm a Sonder, and it's amazing that you can be on the 10th floor and you can, it's like you hear, I guess they echo up the between the buildings. I'm facing away from Canal. So it's not even, you wouldn't even think that, you'd hear, but the reveling is unrivaled in this town. That is for sure. And Saturday, I mean, there's lots to discuss, obviously, including Friday's action, the New York carryovers. I want to slip that in. I don't want that to slip through the cracks. And the hitting the pick five slipped through the cracks with the one big price, the John Service Invader that wired that. What was that, the fourth race? Third or fourth race. But it was absolutely worth swinging at, that's for sure, and the pick six too. But obviously the major focus came right here, and the 13 race, should we call it an extravaganza? Yeah, we should. It was a fun day here, and it's funny, we did kind of wonder going into Saturday, into Risen Star Day, how much the weekend, the Mardi Gras lead-up weekend, was going to affect attendance, and it did. And talked to actually Jason Boulay from Fairgrounds, and he says every 7 years, it's like one of those calendar anomalies, that every 7 years, Mardi Gras and Risen Star weekend collide. And I've only ever been here for Risen Star when it's the previous weekend, so it's still, things are starting to percolate, but it's still 10 days away, or right after. And in fact, I think the first time we stayed at the Indigo, when I brought Tina, and that was a President's Day week or weekend, the way things fell, as I recall, and the aftermath of Mardi Gras, you know, was still in the trees and in the sewers, because apparently the all the beads when they go down the sewer. It is impressive. One thing that's amazing, after each of these parades downtown, in fact, this morning as I was coming here, the streetcar maintenance team with blowers blowing out things like beads and whatever that have gotten in the streetcar tracks. I was like, wow. But it's amazing. And you hear one, the other thing you hear all night is street cleaning. They're out there, you know, as soon as the streets thin out, they swing into action and they start cleaning, try to clean up. I mean, this has got to be a thankless, endless task. I mean, apparently though, today and tomorrow will be, I guess, less, maybe. I don't know. Somebody said, no, Saturday and Sunday, those are the days, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that get nuts. And so I think it affected the on-track attendance here on Saturday. Part of the other thing is that, you know, they close streets. There's a lot of, you know, main access roads get, Orleans gets closed and canals closed, and, you know, there's certain, St. Charles, and so for the parades. So I think a lot of people just don't, they either are on foot or they just don't venture out much. So it was, you know, decent attendance, but it wasn't like the Rising Star normally. And of course, Louisiana Derby Day will be terrific. The results, of course, leading up and you know, it was a pretty formful. Obviously, it was for those that played and were keeping close tabs. It was very formful for a good portion until there were a couple of the 3-year-old action in particular. You know, kind of spun out of control late. Let's be honest. And I don't want to focus on Hoosier Philly, but it's hard not to, you know, given how much, you know, hubbub was involved. And, you know, every indication was that she was coming in good off the layoff. You know, had been away since November. But she had a lot of things go against her. You know, she had a bad start. The carrying on about the start is a little over dramatized. I mean, she did not have a great start, but she was dull, and at no point really. I mean, there was maybe Elf, you know, toward Miracle and Pretty Mischievous, and it was a slow pace. So, under the circumstances, you know, to you know, be at the back of the pack mid stretch, in the back stretch. You know, they were going to be hard to reel in anyway. But, I mean, she's supposed to be able to do that. And she just looked out of sync. And particularly down the stretch. I mean, she was sort of, seemed like, and I'm the world's worst when it comes to lead changes, but it seemed like she was swapping maybe leads, and she looked uncomfortable. And part of it, you know, could have been, you know, the way she, you know, had to be handled by Morales. So Tom Amos and company will have to regroup and 2-5. I mean, she finished third. Brendan Walsh will join us here in the early portion of the show. The terrific afternoon for Brendan, and in particular, I mean, obviously winning the Rachel Alexandra is terrific with Pretty Mischievous into Mischief Philly, obviously, and a big night, a big day for Godolphin, who won 3 and 2 for Bren and 1 for Brad Cox. We'll get to, in some ways, maybe the most impressive performance of the day. Bishop's Bay and Brad Cox's 2,000th career win. But in a lot of ways, I mean, 8-1 on Pretty Mischievous was also, you know, a big number. Hoosier Philly was not the only disappointment. Chop Chop was absolutely, maybe in some ways, worse. I mean, she was just a completely a non-factor. Hoosier Philly at least tried to rally and loom up and tried to draw into contention. Chop Chop just basically went backwards on a steady basis. Vava didn't run particularly well. Cherie DeVoe had a nice enough afternoon, and Cagliostro ran very well, and you know, one of the performances and one of the races of the day that is going to absolutely have ramifications going forward was the allowance race. And it was neither Banishing, and we'll find out from Brendan, because Banishing was awful. I mean, that was another, I forgot about that. That was another disappointment. And First Defender tried to carry them as far as he could. And even Tappet Shoes didn't have much to say in there. It was Cagliostro for Cherie, who looked like a winner. And here came, as I said, time for Kenny McPeak to do Kenny McPeak things. I even said that to Kenny on Saturday. Dennington, 90, what? I put these up yesterday. I should know. 91 buyer. So that's obviously a horse that you're going to see, you would think, in the Louisiana Derby. That gets us to the boys' race. Field of 14, and I walked out of here shaking my head. I walked out of here and went to Ye Olde College Inn for dinner, and just shaking my head, because you had two guests over the week previous here. You had Brad Cox himself, and you had Sid Fernando. We talked about the $70,000 Albaugh purchase and almost 14-1. This is the beauty. I'll say this, and I for those that read the analysis, you know, I said at the end, do not be afraid to swing and use horses, and you know, there was no combination here. I mean, I suppose, you know, the horses that were 99-1, I mean, they were fishes out of water. So, you know, I suppose there were a couple of horses that you could, you know, trim this to 12 to consider for deep exotics. But there was almost no combination that wasn't going to have a chance in here, because the pace figured to be square, or at least honest, and it was honest. Fairly easy. What, 23-1, 23-1, and you know, honest enough pace early, and it was clearly a pace that allowed the late runners to get involved. I mean, in fact, you know, you look at the chart. I'm just looking at the chart, and I didn't realize it until just looking now. But in fact, there was no super high five, but the only horse, and I was going to say the two fills ran very well again. The only horse that really was close to the pace that was around at the end was two fills. Angel of Empire was about two-thirds of the way back, was sitting ninth early, a brilliant ride, really, by Louis Saez. And Sun Thunder, who deserves plenty of credit, also McPeak. So, you know, this was a good Saturday for McPeak on these grounds. Sun Thunder was 12th and 11th after a half mile. 10th after three quarters. Tappet's Conquest ended up fourth, and he was sitting 12th after a half mile. And Single Ruler, I ended up, it's funny, I mean, I you saw that I put Single Ruler in as the best value, as the third choice, with Harlow Cap and Victory Formation, but and also, you know, Two Fills and Croupy. Croupy's the one that, you know, if there was going to be a pace collapse, didn't he have a right to get involved? And he basically split the field. He ended up seventh, beating about seven or eight lengths. But the other stalker, mid-pack, and further back types, they came running. Harlow Cap, you know, determinedly set the early pace, with Harlow Cap determinedly ended up last. And Harlow Cap was sixth. And Two Fills, who was fifth after a half, third. So really, you had four of the top five that were ninth, 10th, 11th, and 12th in the early running. And that's, I mean, that actually, that does speak toward a collapse. But from terms of the splits, they were, you know, 23-1, 47-2, 112-1, 138-2, 151-2. So 90 or 87 buyer for Angel of Empire. And yeah, this group, they're going to have to go a mile and 3/16 next. You know, the early read is that, you know, that they came home, you know, a little slow, and that this is a group that, you know, has got to get a little faster. This doesn't, right now, doesn't look like, you know, we've got Epicenter and company coming out of here, at least for now. Again, it's mid-February. This is still a little early. So anyway, the disappointment here, Victory Formation, he was fourth. He was, you know, with Pratt, was in what felt like a comfortable position. Went off at a tick under 2-1. And yeah, I mean, other than that, it was sort of what we, you know, what we kind of were looking forward to. Kind of a, you know, big bulky field that some trips were going to be a big part of it. And Brad Cox, Pennsylvania bred, and you hear on a regular basis, and we have conversations on a regular basis about the Pennsylvania bred program. And so, I tell you, we're only 6 weeks in. This is, I think, this is probably maybe the third. What, the third maybe Pennsylvania bred graded stake winner of the already, right? Didn't. Last week there was some. There last week or 2 weeks ago there was also a PA bred won one of the preps, right? Was it one of the California horses? I gotta check on that. Anyway, so the 3 year olds, when it came to the boys and the girls, in terms of the stakes and the allowance, some important results obviously that we'll continue to track. The Dennington win. Actually, you know, not just Fern Circle Magdalena, you know, the McPeak program, as it were. They also bred this horse, and I when we talked to Kenny, I'll have to ask about that. I think this is a fairly new development that they, you know, they're producing their own. A Gun Runner out of the Congrats Mayor, Stronger Than Ever. And Dennington is going to have a role going forward. So the other 3 year old action was of the maiden variety, and there were certainly some fun and exciting results. I mentioned Bishop's Bay. Bishop's Bay is going to force himself into conversation, and he certainly lived up to expectation and promise as laid out by Frank McGoey and company. Bishop's Bay went off at 1-2, so he was no secret, certainly. But Brad Cox also won 2 here, I should mention. That first mission, you know, with all the attention about Bishop's Bay, and of course it was win number 2,000 for Cox, the runner-up here persevered with Luis Saez and ran very well. And the 97 buyer for Bishop's Bay. So 96 probably, it looks like, three-quarters of a length for first mission. So the top pair come out of here looking like they've got futures as sort of advertised. A big, bulky group that is involved in Bishop's Bay. This is the Uncle Mo, actually a Windstar bred, $450,000, but the partners, Spendthrift and Ned Toffee, prominent throughout. Ned Toffee is prominent throughout wherever he goes because he's like 6'6". So there's no missing Ned. Steve Landers is involved, a Cox institution as an owner. Buzz Schwartz, Martin Schwartz. In fact, I think Bishop's Bay, wasn't he wearing? I think Giroux was wearing Schwartz's jacket. He was, hot orange. Yeah. With a blue yoke. Yep. Michael Dubb involved too. So there, and there may be more. They ran out of room on this thing on the chart. Spendthrift, Landers, Schwartz, and Dubb. They're also available to do your taxes. Hey now, no, Green Group for your taxes. Anyway, Bishop's Bay. So when we talk to Brad next, we'll get the details there. The maiden winners, before we talk about the older horses, there was also Cox, I think, what, an hour earlier, half an hour earlier? Merlaza came through and was a handy winner for Don Alberto, homebred, Medaglia d'Oro, out of the Distorted Humor Mare, Mi Vida. This also with Giroux. Was not as zippy on the figure front. I think there was a good second and a half, 2 second difference. Merlaza, 75 for Merlaza. Was happy that Neil Pessin got a win on the day. I think Neil, if he had it to do over again, would not have run Happy American. He would have. I'm sure he's rethinking that. A little frustrated. But he did get baseline beater, the flatter. In fact, there was a couple of flatter winners. I don't know if you saw my numbers from yesterday. I gave the figs. There, it just so happened, it caught my eye. 13 different stallions represented by the 13 winners on Saturday here, which is somewhat unusual, especially when you've got. Glut of 3-year-olds. So, anyway, baseline beater, a flatter out of the Tisnow mare, sees the ring, bred by Chippewa bloodstock. So Lothenbach, and as it happens, Neil, there was the Neil exacta. How about Neil's other horse, that Earl of Dassel, who he didn't think was necessarily going to be ready, but he runs 1-2 in here with the Lothenbach products. Pretty cool. And I'm sure he was delighted for Earl of Dassel to make that first time around 2 turns for him. He's a Cairo Prince. Out of a Freud mare, the famed Dr. Melfi, from the era of Sopranos named horses, Peter Callahan bred. That was a $95,000 purchase. And baseline beater was $130,000 as a Keeneland yearling. Fifth career start and a nice, very nice effort. So that, I hope... assuaged the sting of Happy American, who, it's, you know, it's funny, Chad Schexnader, and I'm sure Chad discussed it a little with us, and because he was the one who made it known that there was a chance Happy American wasn't going to run. But Chad also had talked about how Happy American is a, it doesn't help you in advance, but that he's a horse that's an easy read pre-race. And if he's got two grooms, if he's got a groom on either side when he's dragging grooms around the paddock, he's a go. Yesterday, Saturday, he was passive and had his head down and one groom. He was a one groom horse on Saturday, and then really never lifted a hoof. Now, speaking of which, that gets us to the Mineshaft, since we went in this direction, and, you know, I was live to some horses in that pick four and needed either of the Brett Calhouns would have been, and I Pioneer Medina got bet like iron and then ran a terrific race. I don't know what else can you say, but the Pletcher returnee, he was only away 6 weeks. Not like he hadn't been seen since last summer or anything. But that was a very good 4-year-old debut. 99 buyer for Pioneer of Medina, and wins the Mineshaft, and I suppose we'll come right back here for the New Orleans as well. You know, got beat by Skippy Longstocking in the Harlan's Holiday at the end of last year on New Year's Eve. This is his first graded stake win, which seems a little mildly surprising. But he likes that he came back here and you know, he won an allowance here last January. Remember that he was the horse that Pletcher had sent here for an allowance from Florida, then came back for the Risen Star in the Louisiana Derby, and ran well in all of them. I mean, you know, was no match for Epicenter in either, but ran okay. So he likes it here a little bit, and good performance. I know that the whole Calhoun team was a little heartsick to run second and third in here. And there were strides where it looked like they were going to run 1-2. And there was no way to know if it was going to be Run Classic at 8-1 or Mr. Wireless, who went off at a crazy 13-2. That was crazy. Because Mr. Wireless, to me, I mean, he's the horse that had run the most consistent winning-type races. And that was a... this hurt. And actually, the day from here, I didn't have Pioneer Medina on a single ticket, personally. I just had him shuffled down the pecking order. You know, I thought Hoist the Gold was more eligible. Big Blue Line, who just kind of ran evenly, 6-1. Yeah. Tawny Port was second choice in here at 7-2. In fact, I don't know who I was with, but we were looking at the board and said, who's betting Tawny Port at this price? I didn't get him at all. So anyway, this was one of those wincing results. And you know, even though it wasn't like a field like you had in the Risen Star, ground loss may have played into this. And Deshaun Parker with Mr. Wireless from the 8-hole, he lost some ground. He was like in the 4 path, and then I think even on the 2nd, I think he lost ground basically on both turns, and got beat ahead. Yeah, so you can't give up the kind of ground that seemed that he did. We'll save a little bit of the discussion for Brendan Walsh, who's going to join us momentarily. wins the Al Stahl. What a, you want to talk about a miracle finish? Here's Lake Lucerne, who never wins. Not that she never wins. That's not fair. That's mean-spirited. That's not what I mean. But she was 3-for-22 coming in. And for those that, you know, don't, if you don't use Formulator, if you don't use full PPs, you didn't see a win on her page in her last dozen starts. So going back to September of 21. Lots of seconds and thirds. Mostly thirds and fourths. But Lake Lucerne hits a walk-off home run out of the wonderful Michael Matz round pond. The Dabawi mare at age 6 heads off to the breeding shed. No matter how hard Brendan was politicking Michael Manahan from Godolphin, no matter how no matter how much arm twisting was going on, she's going to be bred. And we'll talk about Lake Lucerne off into the sunset. But they ran 1-2, we should mention, because Mike Stidham, Stidham is the one that gets to go on with Soft Touch, who was a good second in here. And I do want to talk, we'll talk to Brendan about this turf course situation where it feels, you know, looking at the course from up here, I'm on the sixth floor, looking down at the course, it feels like the inside paths are ready to be utilized. I mean, maybe they'll wait for Louisiana Derby Day, but in fact, I talked to Michelle Lovell, she actually, we'll get to this race next, she sent English Tavern to a good third place finish in the fairgrounds. And we were talking, I said, well, you know, what's your thought? She said, well, there's a couple of sandy spots, but she said, it's really not, you know, it's not bad. Since she had been out there, and she said, it's not, she thinks they could be running on it soon. So we'll get some opinions from Brendan as well. Anyway, so there's most of the highlights. The other two stakes, Chad Schechsnader, told you, Evan Singh drawing in for Al Stahl. Just wears down Anguston, Lon Wiggins, and I think there were a lot of people, not that anybody was, you know, not happy for Al Stahl and owner Norman Chang. It was a homebred of his, the hardspun gelding, Evan Singh, 4-year-old. Got a lot of racing ahead. But the story with Anguston, they could make a movie. Horse was in a van accident. You name it, it's happened to this poor horse. I really should get, actually, I may reach for Lon Wiggins today and let Lon tell you the whole story. It's like Tess of the D'Urbervilles. It's little Nell on the tied to the... tied to the railroad tracks. Sweet Polly Purebred. It's what a story. And he ran huge away since June of 21. It gets beat 3/4. Yeah, no, great story. And then there was two Emmys. Hugh Robertson, who's he's the greatest. Hugh Robertson, popular winner, two Emmys, just absolutely just toyed with the field. James Graham just out there loping. There was not going to be any getting to the 7-year-old English Channel star that wins the fairgrounds. So those were the highlights here from Saturday. I think at some point, probably mid-show, we'll probably get a visit in from Kevin Kilroy, see what Kevin's thoughts were on the weekend, thanks to him. Great job by him and Chap and Joe, Christofek, everybody contributed something. James, everybody had got a little something on the on Saturday from the guest lineup. The other two winners, Tambourine Star for Jose Cameo and Miss Evelyn. The Britland Homebred, of course, Star Guitar. And I mentioned the third win by Godolphin, Brad Cox with Comparative. Early on in the card, I just was walking in, actually. I missed the first and was just getting there for the second. They were galloping out as I came in. And Shane Wilson, too. She's a lucky rebel. Broke Maiden. That was the Lobred group. And where's that? Tambourine Star, of course, was the Lobred Allowance. So there was your Risen Star Day, and it was a lot of fun. And the nice, comfortable weather was good. Everything was as pleasant as could be. Really a fun day here. Risen Star has become, I think next time around, when Risen Star Day, 7 years from now, God willing, we will be here for Louisiana Derby instead, because the Mardi Gras complications, it's a little, yeah, I can pass on that, I think. Although maybe, Tina did not, I was telling her about things. She said, well, I'm glad I'm not there. That's what she said. So I guess she's not all that hyped up to be here for a Mardi Gras either. But it is something. I'm glad I will be here to experience it. Although tomorrow we will stay around just long enough to see what the Amoses are wearing for their famous Mardi Gras getup. And then we got to head toward Oaklawn Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Hot Springs. Looking forward to that. A couple of notes also. Let's touch on a few things quickly before we reach out for Brendan Walsh. Rich Migliori, of course, at 10. I mentioned Kevin and, of course, John White later. And we are going to talk also to William Humphrey, which was one of the weekend's, one of those stories that you can't make up in the sport. The sport does it to you every time, right? What do I say? The greatest unscripted drama in sports. At Laurel on Saturday, if you know, there was only so much everybody obviously can follow. But if you didn't pick up on the result, in the General George, which was the last of the stakes at Laurel, and thanks to Callie for her preview, we did get, how about swaying to and fro, by the way? We got to get to her, winning the Barbara Fritchie at a fat 6-1. That was okay. But the sweetest story, bittersweet, came in the General George, where Will Humphrey, who I think his bug fairly recently lost a bug. Humphrey riding for Lynn Cash on Eastern Bay gets his first graded stake win. 7-1, almost 8-1, paid 1740. And what is amazing about this, and what made it such an emotional scene, first racing and the team at Laurel had helped champion the Appreciation Day for Avery Wisman with his family and with the PDJF. And the tie-in to this is that Eastern Bay, if you were to look up Avery Wisman's riding record and you click on top horses, Eastern Bay was his top horse. He won, I think, 3 races on Eastern Bay, and not only did he win the races on Eastern Bay, what was interesting is that as Eastern Bay was getting claimed, 50,000, 62.5, everybody that, you know, series of horsemen that trained Eastern Bay before Lynn Cash, they kept using Avery Wisman, and he kept winning, and he kept, you know, having nice performances with Eastern Bay. And so here, Wiseman's life being celebrated and trying to create awareness for mental health issues. And the horse he's most successfully associated with wins his first stake, graded stake, and young Will Humphrey wins his first. So Will's going to join us. We'll talk about what it meant to him and one of those the game produces things like this. It's just amazing to me. The rest of that action at Laurel, by the way, Barry Schwartz with his homebred Stonewall Star wins the Wide Country as the near second choice, wire to wire, and romped away under Angel Cruz. Big performance. Horacio De Paz, who is so tough. Coffee with Chris, the ride on Curlin, bred by the NTRA's own Tom Rooney. How great is that? I saw that Tom had tweeted something out. He was tickled as can be to have a Miracle Wood winner, graded stake winner. And Coffee with Chris, this is a nice win. He loves Laurel. I mean, he won the heft. This is a nice horse. We'll see. This was a mile. And I think this is, that was his first time going a mile. John Saltzman trains. And Jamie Rodriguez aboard. Saltzman owns, along with Fred Wasserloos and Anthony Geruso. Nimitz class, good old Nimitz class for Bruce Gravettes. And owner Tom Coulter. Pennsylvania bred by Munnings. Wins the Campbell. Hybrid Eclipse for Brittany Russell and Stuart Grant. This is a painter, 5-year-old mare, out of a valid wager, filly mare slash. Good consistent, hard-hitting 5-year-old mare. She's made 4.25. Seventh career win for Hybrid Eclipse and the Nellie Morse. And as mentioned in the Barbara Fritchie, swaying to and fro, able to turn the tables, not just on Fee d'Esprit, and Fee d'Esprit was a good second in here, but the favorite was Past the Champagne, which was a little, I was a little surprised by this. The Weaver, yeah, the Weaver Randy Hill Black Type mare, filly, mare. But swaying to and fro. Mario Saray, Baxter Racing, and this a straight-talking filly bred by Gory Smith. And in fact, Gory had a hell of a day as a breeder because I think he bred English Tavern, right? Or did Hammy, or maybe Hammy Smith is on the breeder line. One of the Smith brothers is on the breeder line, I think, for that horse of that was sent to, right? Let me see. Now that I said it, I've got to confirm it because I'm ridiculous that way, and I'm almost positive, because as it happens, I was talking to Michelle Lovell about English Tavern. She loves, she really likes this horse. Oh, no, I take that back. I'm wrong. Dr. Huber and the English Channel co-owners bred English Tavern. But there was a horse somewhere on the card Saturday. There was another horse that either Hammy or Gore, I'm almost positive there was another Gory Smith bred runner somewhere in a stake on Saturday. So, Eastern Bay, Nancy Lee Farms bred originally, and this horse at age 9, so 53 career starts, 19 career wins. And he's now closing in. Let me see. He got, what, $150,000 for this, right? So that made him a millionaire. He's made over $1 million. Amazing, amazing story. All right, let's get Brendan Walsh in here and talk to Brent. Because I've got plenty more, obviously. I got California to talk about. We've got, how about Dwayne Lucas? Last Samurai with a mammoth performance in the Razorback. Yowza. 105 Beyer. T. Pletch, classy addition, won the Royal Delta. So two graded stake wins on the afternoon for the Pletcher camp. Got to get to those two turf sprints at Tampa. And actually probably talk about that with Mig as part of the cross-country. We'll save the other New York stuff. Leo Powell, Freedom Flyer in the Wishing Well. And yesterday in the Spring Fever, Alice Marble. Very nice. Very, very nice. Phil D'Amato. And can't say no, Nick Alexander. All right, and we got to get Houston in. We got so much to do. But let me get Brendan in for a quick hit. You know my theory. The quickest way to enhance the quality of a show is always to have some sort of Irish or English accent or Australian. It just elevates. The just brings the show to a higher level. And Brendan Walsh, he brings the show to a higher level, even if he didn't have an accent. Congratulations on a very, very nice day Saturday.
Oh.
Brent, where are you?
Yeah, I got you, Steve, sorry.
That's all right. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, I was telling everybody that no matter how hard you tried, you couldn't convince Michael Banahan to keep Lake Lucerne in training.
I think I pushed it far enough at this stage, Steve.
Well,
it was kind of an ongoing thing. We couldn't get her to win that stake, and this was probably her. It was her last go at it. So it was nice to get it done.
Well, and she was terrific. I mean, and it's so funny because we were laughing about her after the race because she's been maddening for you for ages. I mean, you can't see a win on her page on her PPs, and here she jumps up, and you know, you found a smart spot for her to try to get that win.
Yeah, no, she had been very consistent though, Steve. she's been knocking on the door pretty much every time. It was just a question of things going right, and you know, often in situations they don't. And it would have been a shame if we wouldn't have gotten the stakes win. But thankfully, she came good on Saturday. So it was that was fantastic because she's obviously got a great pedigree, and that's worked everything to an operation like Godolphin. So it was great to get it done for them as much as anything.
Well, exactly, and you could probably look forward now. You wait and watch and look forward to a Lake Lucerne baby coming your way.
Yeah, that would be nice. Please God, you know, she should make a lovely broodmare. She's a beautiful filly, and obviously, like we said, has the pedigree. So can't see why she wouldn't go on to greater things as a broodmare.
You know, I think we've talked about her in context of other, you know, of other occasions where you had won some other stake. And she might have been on an undercard, and that happened a lot. But you know, being out of Round Pond, you never thought about giving her a dirt try.
No, she. You know, we did think about it. We thought about it last year. At one point, they came off the grass, and we were kicking it around. But she's never really shown us an awful lot. On the dirt, Steve, even in her work, and you know, she never jumped up and said, you know, I need to go on the dirt. But and plus, physically, she looks very turfy looking. She's not a very big filly. She's just really nicely put together, typical European type. You know, typical Dubawi actually. But yeah, that's why we never really cared to try the dirt with her.
Fair enough. Lake Lucerne, and she's going to head off to the broodmare career. Did Michael suggest the has a mating been determined?
No, didn't say yet. I think they're still undecided, Steve. But I would presume they'll send her to probably one of their top stallions or a top stallion. You would have to think.
She's by Dubawi, and I'll run this by Sid, see who he recommends. And not that Godolphin needs all that much help when it comes to making those decisions. But this was part of a very good day, obviously, for Godolphin. And we'll talk about more in a minute. Let's turn to the co-feature, Brendan, and talk about how things unfolded and the win in the Rachel.
Steve, it's funny. She's just had one blemish on her career, if you could even call it that. You know, she got beaten, I would say, comprehensively by Hoosier Filly at the end of last year at Churchill in the Golden Rod, but she didn't run a bad race by any means. She ran third, which is great. But I think she really learned a lot that day. She went from sprinting to routing, and she was drawn one, and she got stuck down inside, and it wasn't ideal. But she came back and she's done really well, developed really well over the winter. She came back in the Untappable and was very impressive, I think. I don't think she got the credit that she deserved that day. You know, she beat the Elise Look and Vava. And, of course, the Elise Look came back out and beat some nice fillies in the Silver Bullet day, including Chop Chop, if I'm not mistaken. So her form is actually very good. And I think people just kind of forgot about her a little bit, but she had been doing super going into the race. And, you know, we were quietly confident, because obviously we had plenty other options as well. But we decided we'd stay at home and try this spot and not have to ship her anywhere. And thankfully she ran a very, very good race. And I hope that she gets the credit she deserves. I mean, you don't go 4 for 5 as a 2-year-old, early 3-year-old, and not be a very, very good filly. So she's got the pedigree for it. She's got the looks for it. She's turned into a beautiful filly. So hopefully she can go on and go on to better things as the year goes on.
Well, you bring up a good point, actually, about the record. And you know, there was also the fact, as you allude, that she beat the Alice Look, you know, who turned around and won the Silver Bullet day. And yet, for whatever reason, she was relegated here behind, I guess, let's see, Hoosier Filly, Pretty Mischievous, 8-1, 7-2 on Chop Chop. And actually, Vava was 11-1. So she was third choice. But, you know, in terms of the win pool, that was a very attractive 18-20 for her backers. That you may not see that again, you know, anytime soon. 83 buyer as well, Brendan, if you hadn't seen the fig. And that's a career best too. So she took another step forward, and she's been at Mile and a 16th twice, and Fairgrounds Oaks next month.
You would have to think that would be the natural next step to go with her, Steve. You know, she obviously has a liking for this track, so we've got that, and we wouldn't have to ship her either. So, you would think that would probably be the next option. I mean, obviously there's some other stuff we're going to kick around, but that would probably be the natural next step to go with her.
Well, and everything, you know, she's into Mischief. She's out of Pretty City Dancer, the Tappet mare, and Godolphin Homebred. She's got tactical speed. It is notable, Brendan, that this is now the second race in a row where she's actually stayed a little closer to the pace than she did in her early starts.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, she was sprinting earlier too. But yeah, she's got plenty natural speed, Steve, you know, which is, as we know, is a very important thing for these two-turn horses as they go along. But, you know, so yeah, she has learned to lay up a little closer and you know, but she does have a very high cruising speed, and I think that's probably her biggest asset, you know.
Very nice. Pretty Mischievous, your Rachel Alexandra winner, and Tyler Gaffleone got back aboard. Brian Hernandez Jr. had ridden her, actually, in the Untappable. But Tyler clearly is the regular rider going forward. The grade two capping a three-win day for Godolphin. We do have to ask about a couple of misfires and what is the read on Banishing in that, should I say, puzzling return?
He's fine, Steve. I think basically he got he just got tired. In hindsight, you know, we missed the week. He worked the week before the LeCompte. He was scheduled to run the day of the LeCompte in an other den, and you know, he worked the week before. Obviously, he caught himself the night before the LeCompte, so we missed that whole week. We missed the following week. He didn't work either because we were trying to get the cut healed up, and then he went back to work the following week. So he had 3 weeks where he didn't get to work at all. And some of that time too, obviously with the cut, we were jogging, walking, what have you. So, you know, we only really got two works into him, from there. So, you know, in hindsight, it probably wasn't enough. I thought the horse was in a good spot. He was up there. He was traveling nicely. And I think basically when he got to the quarter pole, he just got a little leg weary, you know. But thankfully, he's come back. He'll benefit from having had the run, obviously, the other day. And we'll take our time and we'll get him back light again and get a nice string of work into him. And he should be back on the racetrack here before too long again. I'm sure he looks like he's a very talented horse. So, you know, we'll be fine. He'll get a chance to mature as well, and we'll take our time with him and do what's right by him.
Well, does this kind of I don't want to say derail his spring targeting, or I mean, do you back up allowance again, or you know, if he comes out of this and moves forward, and if it helped him enough, do you think about, you know, taking a swing? Because it feels like after that, you know, you still are only probably going to have one clear chance to, you know, to try to earn some points if there's still any Derby hopes for him. I mean, he's certainly a horse from a pedigree standpoint. He's almost a horse that feels like a Belmont target as much as anything else.
Yeah, no, I don't think we're going to throw him in. I think it wouldn't be right to throw him in at the deep end again. You know, the next time, I think we'll probably take our time with him now, Steve. You know, physically, he's a horse that's probably going to get a lot nicer as the year goes on. You know, so there's no point in rushing anything and trying to make the Derby. So, you know, we'll take our time. We'll get him back. Like I said, we'll get him back going right. And we'll pick our spots along the way. Who knows, maybe he would be a Preakness or a Belmont horse. Who knows? But if that falls into place, then well and good. But we won't do anything that he's not ready for. But you know, he has come out of the race good, so he should be back. You know, hopefully we can get a nice regular pattern of works and races into the horse from here on, and then I'm sure he'll mature as he goes along, and he'll tell us when he's ready for these bigger things.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Brendan Walsh with us, and before we go, let me also ask you about the maiden breaker, that third career start yesterday at Gulfstream in the Turf Sprint. Golden Nugget, who really kind of took a nice step forward in his third career start.
Yeah, no, we were delighted with him, Steve. You know, we thought an awful lot of the horse. Corbin Blumberg bought him last year at the sale, at the Debris sale in Ocala. And we loved the horse because I was there at the sale myself, and we really liked the horse. And you know, he stretched out and bought him. And his first couple of runs were okay. He's quite a big horse, and he probably needed a couple of runs. But yesterday, you know, we worked him on the grass at Palm Meadows, and he'd worked really well. And obviously, being by Mendelssohn, he had that turf angle. You know, so we tried the turf yesterday with him, the sprint, and it worked out great. So I think he's going to be a nice horse as we go along as well. He should be exciting moving forward.
You know, modestish figure, 70 buyer, but this was a big move forward after kind of getting drilled on the dirt in a couple of tries. So it looks like there's plenty to work with going forward. Well, Brendan, obviously a very nice weekend, very nice Saturday, particularly here, and a Rachel Alexandra winner, looking ahead toward things like Fairgrounds Oaks and ideally Kentucky Oaks. Well done. It's always fun to spend a Saturday like that and be able to see you and talk to you pre and post races. Well done.
Yes, thank you very much, Steve. Thank you.
Brendan Walsh, everybody. Bren P. Walsh on your Twitter machine. Let's take the top of the hour break. Going to have Rich Migliori swing through. We'll see what Mig is up to. Is he gathering eggs? Is he cleaning stalls? Is he picking manes? We'll see. He's doing guaranteed. He's doing something. Maybe he's hiking. Tina sent me some Instagram video clip of five upstate New York, magical upstate New York hiking trails. And shockingly, we've been on one of them, which was Watkins Glen in the Gorge. I told you that. We didn't know what, we had no idea what we were doing. We just parked, we walked in, and next thing you knew, we were on this, whatever it is. It's like 6 miles. I'm wearing dress shoes. She's wearing flip-flops. It was ridiculous. It was pretty cool. But anyway, I bet you Mig has been on. I'll have to forward that to Mig. I don't know if he's on Instagram. You know, Mig might be a sensation on Instagram. He could put food pictures. Instagram doesn't have any of that. Hey now. I'm kidding. We kid because we love. It is Washington's birthday. Lots of racing. Aqueduct. They'll run the Haynesfield today. Steve Asmussen, by the way, 2,000 wins for Cox. 9,999 for Steve Asmussen. It looked like a certainty that he was going to get number 10,000 on Saturday, but then no good. And then yesterday he had, I think, he had like eight or nine runners yesterday and had, I think, 4 seconds. Last night, I was kind of thinking about stuff for the show, and I said, oh, let me check on Asmussen, and no good. Today, I think he's got 10, what did I write down? I wrote it down somewhere. I think he's got 10 starters today at Oaklawn, Sam Houston, Fairgrounds, and Aqueduct. And ideally, where is it? I know I have it here somewhere. I give up. He does have Bankit. 3-1 in the Haynes Field, but he's got a couple early at like 3 o'clock Eastern at Oakland. I think he's got two in the second. I think he's got one in the fourth and fifth, maybe. He's got like four horses at Oaklawn. Then his fifth starter of the day is Bankit. He's got Chestertown, good old Chestertown, in the seventh as well in New York. But anyway, so I would think Asmussen gets number 10,000 today. Rich Migliori joins us next. Kevin Kilroy ahead, Will Humphrey, John White, and much, much more. We're live at Fairgrounds. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best.